Let's please turn in our Bibles to Esther chapter 7, verse 9, where we're continuing in our study. We saw last week that the plans of Haman, the Agagite, an Amalekite, descendant of King Agag, his plan was to get a Persian law written that would have allowed in a few months' time after the edict went out, would have allowed for all the Jews to be killed. And had his plan succeeded, there wouldn't have been a Jewish nation today. They would have been effective in getting that edict to eradicate the world of Jews. But God had another plan. His plan is to always keep his promises to his promised people, the Jews, and that's why they're here to this day. And so, after Esther had told the king how it was Haman who had basically tricked the king into making a decree that would cause her to have to die, the king wasn't too excited about an edict that was going to kill his wife and the queen of the country. He didn't know that the edict that he had allowed Haman to write, the law that he allowed Haman to write, would result in his queen dying, his wife dying. And so when he found that out, his wrath turned against Haman for deceiving him. And so now Harbonah, and we covered this last week, but just to lead into today, one of the eunuch, a castrated man that served the king, eunuch being that king never had to worry about that eunuch being a problem among his wives or the queen, said to the king, "Look, the gallows, 50 cubits high, 75 feet high, which Haman made for Mordecai," because Haman had planned on that day to hang Mordecai from the gallows and have them built. So the eunuch is saying, "Hey, king, right out there, look out the window. There's the gallows that Haman made to hang Mordecai, who spoke good on the king's behalf, saved the king's life, actually, months earlier, is standing at the house of Haman." Then the king said, "Hang him on it. Hang Haman on the gallows that Haman had made for Mordecai." So the very thing that Haman planned to do to Mordecai actually falls upon his head. And that's important. So they hanged Haman on the gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai. Then the king's wrath subsided. He was ticked. Haman knew he was going to die. And we can read the other verses of that chapter if you weren't here last week. And then that leads us to chapter 8. And it says, verse 1, "On that day, King Ahasuerus gave Queen Esther the house of Haman, the enemy of the Jews. And Mordecai came before the king, for Esther had told how he was related to her. So the king took off his signet ring, which he had taken from Haman, and gave it to Mordecai, and Esther appointed Mordecai over the house of Haman." So imagine just the day before, when Haman had told his family that that morning, he had told his family, "Mordecai has ruined things. And I had to parade him through town and everything." And they said, "Oh, if he's a Jew, if this Mordecai is a Jew, then your plans to destroy him and the Jewish people are going to fall apart." His own family knew that, because you don't win against the Jews. And so then Haman had been really excited about going to this second banquet that Esther was throwing for the king and for Haman. He had been excited, but now he's going wondering what's going to happen. And it ends up being the banquet that results in his execution decree. And he gets hung on the gallows. So the family would have been saying, "Oh, he's going to that banquet with Esther." And then they see him being led out by the security guards and strung up on the gallows. The next thing they see, and they're probably going, "Oh, those Jews, their God. Their God has just done something to protect the Jews. And now Haman, the father of 10 sons, who he had been bragging about just the day before, I'm so great. God has given me 10 sons, given me all this wealth. I have the king's ring on my finger. Whatever I want to do, I just use the king's ring to put a seal. I can make laws. I can do anything. And I get invited. Only me gets invited to Esther's banquet. That was the day before. Everything was wonderful. And now his family sees him run up on the gallows. And the next thing, the king, he says, wait, before you go and get hung, give me back my ring. He gets the ring back. And then Esther goes, by the way, that Mordecai guy who saved your life, who you wanted to honor this morning and was paraded by Haman around the town with a crown and a horse and all this other stuff, he's actually my uncle. And so he says, okay, take the ring off. Mordecai, you get the ring. The very man who Haman hated gets to be ruled now as king, second in command. And then Esther gets to go down to the Haman's family and said, you guys just got evicted. You got to be out. And it's a few months before the sons all get killed. But the family who was saying, yeah, go get the Jews, go kill Mordecai, go make a gallows and just kill him, get him out of here. Everybody that hates the Jews and wants to kill them are destined to have their hatred turned upon their own head by God. God had promised Abraham, your descendants through Isaac and Jacob, blessing, I will bless those who bless you. I will curse those who curse you. To this day, we have people wanting to curse and hate and want to destroy and kill the Jews. And we can with absolute assurance say that no matter what their plans are, no matter how many nukes they make, no matter how much they enrich uranium, no matter how many missiles they have, no matter how many boats they have, and how many troops and tanks and any, it doesn't matter. The world is going to see a miracle in the same way, because this God is still alive and he's still keeping his promises today as he was then. So now Mordecai is put in charge of making laws with the king's ring. And, you know, it's really amazing. People should realize if the Jews always do survive, it's probably most people like to be on the winning team, right? I mean, everybody's, that's why we cheer. That's why, you know, cities all over the country are, I want to cheer for my football team because do you want them to lose? Does anybody cheer for them to lose? So why do people keep on serving a God that loses? I remember one time I visited my brother in San Jose. I think maybe I've shared this one time before. It's before Juanita and I got married, so it's 39 years ago. And I went to go visit my brother, and he wasn't in his barracks in the Moffett Field there in San Jose area. And I knock, and a guy let me in, and he was moving. He had his locker door open, and there was satanic pictures and books on Satan and everything inside the locker. And I said, oh, so you're a Satan worshiper. Yeah. And he confessed to me that he had been to a human sacrifice in the San Francisco Bay Area. I don't know if it was true. That's what he said. And I asked him while I was waiting for my brother to show up, you know, tell me about this. And he sat there and he told me, he goes, you know what? Actually, some of the things I'm telling you, if they knew I was telling you, they'd probably kill me. He was in a hardcore San Francisco Bay Area Satan worship cult 39 years ago. And so I brought my Bible because I was going to talk to my brother about the Bible. And I said, why do you serve? And I said, why do you do this? And he goes, because of the power. There's power. He had seen power in serving Satan. And I go, he does. He has a lot of power, but he loses. What? And it was just like, what? What do you mean? I go, the end of the book. Where? And I took him to Revelation, where he gets locked up and he's thrown into the pit forever and ever. And you know, judged by God. First locked up, then released again. And then right here, here's his final disposition. He is in the lake of fire forever. You are serving the loser. No matter what kind of power you have now or sense now or your enticements with the flesh and lust, which he said was also very much part of the rituals. And it shook him. It actually shook him. I don't know what happened to that young man. He might have repented. I don't want to serve the loser. And really, again, as there's all this talk, you know, the defense minister of Israel yesterday privately was telling people, oh, you know, Kerry, the State Department, Kerry, he has these messianic thoughts of bringing, you know, winning the Nobel Peace Prize. Like, Terry gets to be the peace prize by negotiating this deal that's a detriment to the nation of Israel and possibly leading us on the path of destruction. Why do we keep on siding with people that hate the Jews when all through history, if we side with the people that hate the Jews, we ourselves are going to be condemned? Why would we do that? Because of just foolishness and not knowing our Bibles, not knowing what the Bible says. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens. But we know the Jews are going to be around a lot longer than the Palestinians and others, and we might as well be on God's side. Verse 3, now Esther spoke again to the king, fell down at his feet, and implored him with tears to counteract the evil of Haman the Agagite and the scheme which he had devised against the Jews. So Haman's dead, but the decree, the law of the Medes and the Persians is still out there. In a few months, all Jews die. You know a Jew, you kill a Jew. That's what the law was. If you see a Jew, you kill a Jew on this day. On the month of Adar, you've got to kill him. And the queen is just going, well, that's nice that Haman's gone. And your wrath has subsided, but all my people are going to die. Now, she had to go into the king again. She had to go into the king, into his royal chambers, which if he does not extend the staff to her, then she gets killed, as we covered earlier in the book of Esther. And he ends up putting the scepter out. So in other words, she was again at threat to her own life, wanting to ensure her people were saved. And just self-sacrificing. That's what our Jesus did, to just allow himself to be sacrificed so we could be saved against the enemy Satan, who had already won the battle to get us to sin, to fall and rebel against God, where all have sinned, fallen short of the glory of God. We're all going to die. And Jesus laid down his self to come and die on our behalf so that we could be saved. Verse 4, and the king held out the golden scepter toward Esther. So Esther arose and stood before the king and said, if it pleases the king, and if I have found favor in his sight, and the thing seems right to do to the king, and I am pleasing in his eyes, let it be written to revoke the letters devised by Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, which he wrote to annihilate the Jews who were in all of the king's provinces. For how can I endure to see the evil that will come to my people? Or how can I endure to see the destruction of my countrymen? You know, the complete humility and submission of a godly Jew. To go, king, if I've been an honorable wife, virtuous wife, if you love me, if you care about me, then please undo this. Revoke this decree, this law that Haman has made against my people. I can't stand to watch my people die. And really, from the Bible says from the foundations of the earth, God had established the rescue plan for man. Why? Because it says in the book of Ezekiel, God takes no pleasure in watching the death of his people. He doesn't desire to see us die and go to the lake of fire. He wants us to be saved. He didn't want to leave us in our condition of sin and death, which is what happened. You sin, you die, so death spread to all men. All are going to die. And God said, I can't watch them all die. We're going to send Jesus down. And for the few that want to believe in him, they're saved. They're not all going to die. We're going to save some. Then King Ahasuerus, verse 7, said to Queen Esther and Mordecai the Jew, indeed, I have given Esther the house of Haman. And they have hanged him on the gallows because he tried to lay his hand on the Jews. You yourselves write a decree concerning the Jews, as you please, in the king's name, and seal it with the king's signet ring, which he had given to Mordecai. For whatever is written in the king's name and sealed with the king's signet ring, no one can revoke. He's basically telling Esther, Esther, I cannot revoke this law. The laws of the Medes and the Persians, just because I'm king, he didn't have as much power as Obama thinks he had. he's saying the Medes and the Persians can't change the law. The king of the Medes and Persians. So you think of a law that's contrary, that somehow fixes this problem. You come up with the words to fix this problem, but the decree that these people get to kill the Jews cannot be undone. And think about what Jesus did. Is there a decree that if you sin, you die? Didn't God say to Adam and Eve, on the day that you eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, you shall surely die? which is basically, on the day you decide to sin against me, you will die. And the decree, that decree still lives to this day. It's still, you can't undo that decree. That decree was the decree that really was also between God and Satan. If you can get these people to sin, well, then I'm going to give you certain powers. Not all power. You know, it's not like Satan is all powerful. God could at any time eliminate him. Satan has to go ask for permission to do things. As we know from the book of Job, he isn't all powerful. But he would have never had any control over anything in this world. There would be no suffering, no death, no disease, no mosquitoes that bring diseases and all this. There would be none had we not brought him in. But when we did, we changed things, and the decree has been alive since then. You sin, you die. But what Jesus did is he wrote another decree. He says, yep, you sin, you die, but if I come into the world, pour myself into a human being, live as a man, tempted as man is, yet without sin, and then I offer myself to die, even though I don't have to die, then I can take death for man and give them my life. And so I'm going to write that decree as a replacement decree. And so as a result, we don't have to die, because Jesus made another way. Much like happened in the book of Esther. So the king's scribes were called at that time in the third month, which is the month of Sivan, on the 23rd day. That's June 21st this year, by the way. First day of summer. It's actually summer. So on the summer day, it was written, according to all that Mordecai commanded to the Jews, the satraps, the governors, the princes of the provinces from India to Ethiopia, the entire area that the Jews lived. Again, they would have all died. That's where they lived. 127 provinces in all, to every province in its own script, to every people in their own language, and to the Jews in their own script and language. A new edict is coming to save the Jews. And he wrote in the name of King Ahasuerus, sealed it with the king's signet ring, and sent letters by couriers on horseback riding on royal horses, bred from swift steeds. By these letters, the king permitted the Jews who were in every city to gather together and protect their lives, to destroy, kill, and annihilate all the forces of any people or province that would assault them, both little children and women, and to plunder their possessions. On one day in all the provinces of King Ahasuerus, on the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month of Adar, that basically the day before the Jews were all supposed to be killed. So they made a new decree that you get to kill anybody that wants to kill you on the day before they're allowed to kill you by law. So now think about this. When the decree goes out, all the Jews all over the world and all the Jew haters are going, yes, we get to kill all the Jews. In a few months, we get to kill them all. And they were walking by the Jews on that day. We're going to get you. You enjoy your last days on earth. The Jews would have understood everybody that hates them. And the Jews would have been realizing we only have a few months left until we're all dead. Then the horses come with this new decree. Everybody that's been telling you for the last several weeks they can't wait to kill you, you get to hit them first. On the day before they're going to kill you, and you are to annihilate and destroy them and deal with them, preempt their desire to kill you. I think we're seeing the very same thing today, don't you? In fact, the Jews have been listening for the months and the years. They've been listening, and they know exactly who wants to completely annihilate them. And Ariel Sharon died this week, and at the funeral, and I should have brought the exact quote, but Netanyahu said, he quoted one of Ariel Sharon's statements when he was prime minister, "The Jews will never again allow the West to ignore the plight of the Jews to the Jewish destruction." In other words, if the West wants to ignore the threat that's been placed upon our people to annihilate us, they can do that. But we're never going to let their ignoring the problem and not dealing with it keep us from dealing with it ourselves. That's what Netanyahu quoted in the funeral this week for Ariel Sharon. And much to the consternation of our own State Department, who who basically said, you know, that's not good for the peace process. You're basically saying you're going to make sure you protect your people from annihilation. And the defense minister, again, he thinks that this peace process, what he's seen of the existing peace process, is the destruction of the Jewish people. And that they can't tolerate it. And so what's going to happen? I don't know. Only God does know. But if we compare it to Esther, the Jews are going to be given a green light. We know the Jews are going to be given a green light by God to implement the Psalm 83, Isaiah 17, Ezekiel 38, 39 wars, and ultimately God himself coming on their behalf on Armageddon to keep the world from annihilating the Jews. And with what it would take to do would result in the death of millions of people. And a copy of the document was to be issued as a decree in every province and published for all the people, verse 13, so that the Jews would be ready on that day to avenge themselves on their enemies. The couriers who rode royal horses went out, hastened and pressed on by the king's command, and the decree was issued in Shushan, the citadel. So Mordecai went out from the presence of the king in royal apparel on blue and white, with a great crown of gold and a garment of fine linen and purple, and the city of Shushan rejoiced and was glad. Again, the people, when they realized that a decree had gone out to destroy all the Jews in Shushan and the rest of the Persian world, and they know it was all because Mordecai refused to bow to Haman, they would have been so bummed at Mordecai. They would have been so perturbed at him for stirring up the pot and getting the world to hate the Jews. And yet now they see him running through town as king under Ahasuerus, you know, the second in command. And why? Why did that happen? Why were the Jews victorious? Because one man refused to compromise. Every other Jew must have bowed to Haman. Everybody must have bowed to Haman, because that's what you do to get along. But one man said, no, I'm not bowing to men. I bow to God. I don't bow to man. Well, he's going to hate us. Well, okay. But God's going to love me. Well, he could kill you. Well, can't kill my soul. He can kill my body. But I'm going to be obedient to God. Well, he could kill us. Why should that bother you? Don't you have a soul? Don't you have a soul that's going to go be with God if you obey him? Why do you think temporal when we live in an eternal world as Jews? And the same question comes to us. Are we going to compromise with this world system to go along so that they like us? Are we going to look at life as eternity? I don't flake on God. I don't flake on his gospel. I keep preaching what he tells me to preach. I keep believing what he tells me to believe. I don't care what the world has to say, because I have a soul that's going to go to heaven if I truly trust in him. And we want other people's soul to go to heaven because they get to still hear the truth somehow of the gospel of Jesus Christ, so that they can have everlasting life. If I stop preaching, they don't hear. Paul lamented, and Jesus lamented, the harvest is ripe, but the laborers are few. Jesus lamented. Paul lamented that how can they be saved unless they hear? How can they hear unless somebody goes to them? And now what's going to happen if they go to churches and they never hear the gospel of Jesus Christ? Because we've toned it down, because people don't want to hear it. I recognize people don't want to hear it. I see how it's changed over the years. I know it. But if we don't do it, we're just like Haman bowing, or we're just like Mordecai's buddies, Jewish buddies, that bowed to Haman because that was the go-along, get-along plan. And the Jews had light and gladness. Now they're all happy. One day they're sad because they look at their circumstances. The next day they're glad. Why? Because they saw that God actually accomplished what he promised. Now they get to see that the promises of God are true. And gladness, joy, and honor, and in every province and city, wherever the king's command and decree came, the Jews had joy and gladness, a feast and a holiday. Then many of the people of the land became Jews, because fear of the Jews fell upon them. We really love Jesus. We hang in there through thick and thin. We get persecuted, and people wonder, why will they be persecuted? Because they believe it's really true. And fear will come upon them. They'll realize there's something to this gospel of Jesus Christ thing, and they'll get saved. They'll become Christians. When Juanita and I went to Israel in 1999, we stayed with the Gepner family in a community called Salit. And Salit was actually right on the flight path of the Scuds coming in from Saddam Hussein's Iraq in 1991. Remember that? Gulf War I? And Saddam Hussein launched 42 Scud missiles on Israel. And the reason why he did that is he thought, I'm going to kill so many Jews, the Jews are going to have to send their fighter planes against me. And then the Arabs, who are going along with Bush Sr. in this coalition to fight me, are going to say, you can't let Jews kill Arabs. And it was all going to, you know, go against us, our coalition. It was all going to break up. And that was his plan. So he sent 42 Scuds. You know how many Jews died? One of a heart attack. One Scud landed directly on an apartment complex full of people. The ambulances show up. The hospitals are all geared up. And they bring in some people with scratches on them. And the doctors, in amazement, that they could have just put Band-Aids on themselves. Another one hits a bomb shelter. And the prime minister goes there the next day and he just sees the absolute destruction. And he goes, was anybody in here? 200 people. And no one was hurt. The people attribute, it's impossible that people did not get hurt from this. And then the Gepner family said, you know, we would be on our rooftops and we would watch the Scuds coming over. And then the day, you know, the day that it stopped? Purim. 1991, the Scuds stopped. Saddam Hussein's great plan to annihilate the Jews and to win in that war all came to a stop that day, and he himself was partially put in his box later on to ultimately die instead of his plan to kill all the Jews, which is what he wanted to do. So, and it was February 14th. Purim is February 14th of this year. The Gulf War ended. The first Gulf War ended. The Scuds stopped on Purim of 1991. And the people, they attributed it to the God of Israel protected them. The Scuds should have killed thousands of people. Many of them landed in empty places. One hit a fuel depot. They had just pumped the tank out the day before. And it didn't cause fire there. It was just so miraculous that people realized God did what he did in the days of Esther. It's just amazing the God we serve. In the 12th month, chapter 9, in the 12th month, that is, the month of Adar, on the 13th day, the time came for the king's command and his decree to be executed. On the day that the enemies of the Jews had hoped to overpower them, the opposite occurred, in that the Jews themselves overpowered those who hated them. I think very soon to be fulfilled again. There's many millions that want to annihilate the Jews, and the Jews are going to have to do something. The Jews gathered together in their cities throughout all the provinces of King Ahasuerus to lay hands on those who sought their harm, and no one could withstand them because fear of them fell upon all people. How could these events, these change of events, happen so quickly? Only a miraculous intervention of God. The people must have been, their heads must have been just swimming. How could this be? How could everything so turn? By the way, a boss this week has said that unless the Jews, this is part of the peace process, you know, they want, you know, a boss, the head of the Palestinian Authority. If you want me to sign that document, I will not sign that document unless you, West and Israel, allows Jerusalem to be called the capital of the Palestinian state. Jews don't get to call it the capital of the Jewish state because he goes on to say, and we will not sign a document that calls Israel a Jewish state. We get to be a Palestinian state in a land that was never given to us by God or anybody else. We can usurp a city that actually is in possession of Israel. We're going to take their city, call it our capital. They can't call it their capital, and they can't even call their state a Jewish state. There will be no peace agreement if that's in the final document. And Kerry has been spending all these man weeks, man months, shuttling around trying to prove America can force peace when God haters who want to annihilate the Jews are making those demands, and we're still playing around as if we can make this agreement. This agreement will not go anywhere. There will be a conflict. There is no avoiding a conflict. And all the officials of the provinces, the satraps, the governors, and all those doing the king's work helped the Jews because the fear of Mordecai fell upon them. Smart people helped the Jews to accomplish what God had decreed for his people. Foolish people went against the Jews to help them try and get killed. For Mordecai was great in the king's palace, and his fame spread throughout all the provinces. For this man, Mordecai, became increasingly prominent. Why? Because God elevated him. Why? Because he was the sole man to take a stand for truth and be courageous. Thus, the Jews defeated all their enemies with the stroke of the sword, with the slaughter and destruction, and did what they pleased with those who hated them. And in Shushan, the citadel, the Jews killed and destroyed 500 men. Also, the 10 sons of Haman. So verses 7 through 10 lists the 10 sons of Haman, where 10 says, the 10 sons of Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the enemy of the Jews, they killed, but they did not lay a hand on the plunder. The Jews never took the plunder. Practically, because they didn't want anybody to tell one another, to stir up, that they just killed those people because they wanted their stuff. Nope, you're not going to use that one on us. We don't kill because we want people's stuff. We only kill because we don't want to die. We don't want to be murdered. It's just like what Golda Meir said after the 1973 war, where so many Jews died. And she bemoaned the fact that so many Arabs had to die. And when she was interviewed by the news media about in the aftermath of the war, they had suffered so horribly. Percentage-wise, they had been so hit. Israel had lost so many soldiers. And she said, we can forgive our Arab neighbors for killing our children. But it is, I can't remember, she says, it's hard to forgive, or we will never forgive them for making us kill their children. They want to kill us. We can forgive them for that. But they force us to just survive, to keep from being wiped off of the face of the earth like they want us to. They force us to have to go and kill them, kill their children, which we hate to do. That we have a hard time forgiving them for. And it hasn't changed. Now, Chuck Missler has, he had a news letter that he's put out years ago, and I first read this, and he says that each one of these names actually is a type of the flesh. The meaning of the names is a type of the flesh. And like I said, Amalekites were a type of the flesh in the scripture. And we have to utterly kill them. And we don't want to get anything for our flesh. We don't want any spoils for our flesh. We don't want the entire, we just want to kill it to keep it from bothering us. And he says that the son, Pashadatha, really means curious self. Busybody, a meddler. Type of the flesh that we have to kill. Busybody, meddler. Dalfun. A weeping self. Self-pity. We have to kill self-pity. Ashphatha. Assembled self. Self-sufficiency. We have to kill self-sufficiency. We have to get rid of all these things. The 10 sons of Haman were all types of the flesh. And I don't know where he gets his lexicon for these meanings, because I've tried to reproduce it in my Bible study aids that I have, and they don't all match up. So I'm just saying, if you study it, some people get Missler's stuff and everything, and you go, wow, this is so cool, I'm going to share it with people. You can only get it there, because I don't know where some of the lexicons are. But it is the truth. Our flesh, your flesh, wants to kill you. My flesh wants to kill me. And sometimes we just want to tolerate it, let it be okay, get some of the benefits of the flesh. And we can't do that. We can't take the spoils of the flesh. And we have to kill it. We just have to realize it's either my flesh or me. I'm either going to walk with Jesus in that area of my life, or I'm going to walk in the flesh in that area of my life. And the Bible says, do not be mocked. If you whatever you sow, you will reap. If you sow of the flesh, destruction. If you sow to the flesh, you will of the flesh reap destruction. And so it's the Jews were saying, it's either them or us. That's why we have to do this, because they wanted to kill us. I have to kill them. And it's the same thing with our flesh. It's either kill the flesh or let the flesh bring destruction into your life. And same thing. On that day, the number of those who were killed in Shushan the citadel was brought to the king, and the king said to Queen Esther, "The Jews have killed and destroyed 500 men in Shushan the citadel and the 10 sons of Haman. What have they done in the rest of the king's provinces? Now, what is your petition? It shall be granted you. Or what is your further request? It shall be done. Whatever it takes to stop this Jew-hating population." Then Esther said, "If it pleases the king, let it be granted to the Jews who are in Shushan to do it again tomorrow, according to today's decree, and let Haman's 10 sons be hanged on the gallows." Don't just let them be dead. Hang them as out in the open so that people can see this is what happens to 10 sons. "Hey, Dad, just go kill Mordecai. Hey, Dad, great. You're going to get rid of all the Jews. We're going to just put them out there for the whole world to see. You don't mess with Jews. Their God is a bigger God than the so-called gods of the nations around." So the king commanded that this be done. The decree was issued in Shushan. They hanged Haman's 10 sons, and the Jews who were in Shushan gathered together again on the 14th day of the month of Adar and killed 300 men of Shushan, but they did not lay a hand on the plunder. The remainder of the Jews in the king's provinces gathered together and protected their lives, had rest from their enemies, and killed 75,000 of their enemies throughout the entire Persian Empire, which is the whole Mesopotamian Valley. It's a whole area between India, Iran, Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Egypt, Ethiopia, that whole area, the whole world, basically, of the Jews at the time. It took 75,000 people to say, "We're going to get you. We're going to get you, Jews." And the Jews said, "Nope, 75,000 of you are going to die." This was on the 13th day of the month of Adar, and on the 14th of the month, they rested and made it a day of feasting and gladness to this day. The Jews celebrate Purim to this day. They read the book of Esther in one sitting on Purim. Every time Haman is mentioned, they go, "Boo, hiss." Every time Mordecai is mentioned, yay. And we have, for several years, will on Purim, on Jewish Purim, on a Sunday evening service, we will read the book of Esther, and we'll have little noisemakers and everything else, and you yell, yay, when Mordecai is mentioned, and boo and hiss. And it actually takes a while to go through when you're doing all the boos and hisses with the name. To do it like the way the Jews do it today, I've been in Israel twice when they're doing Purim, and in both cases, it's almost like our Halloween. They dressed up in all kinds of costumes, have nothing to do with Haman and Mordecai. They just use it as a costume dressing time. There's great festivities in Jerusalem. People are just joyous and happy because they're remembering that God saved their people thousands of years ago from people that wanted to annihilate them. They remember that as a nation, that God protects us. And basically, the rest of this chapter 9 is about how they established that day of Purim. And as I said, it's going to be, what day did I say it's going to be this year? I think it's February 14th, Valentine's Day, this year. So Purim happens on February 14th. And sometimes I think, I actually have thought, Lord, depending on how much saber rattling is going on in the world, if saber rattling is really happening around February, which is when Saddam Hussein started his war and launching Scuds and everything. Actually, we went in, and as soon as we started going in, he started launching Scuds everywhere. That it might be interesting to watch God, on behalf of the Jews, save his people on Purim. It's a time where you would expect that God will show himself strong on behalf of the Jews. Not because he has to, he can show himself strong on any day. It's just that it would be a biblically significant thing, as it was in the first Persian Gulf in 1991, for the missiles to stop on Purim after a miraculous preservation of the people. And chapter 10, verse 1 through 3, the whole chapter. "And King Ahasuerus imposed tribute on the land, on all the islands in the sea. Now all the acts of his power and his might, and the account of the greatness of Mordecai, to which the king advanced him, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Media and Persia?" Well, so much for that. We don't have that book. But "for Mordecai the Jew was second to King Ahasuerus, and was great among the Jews, and well received by the multitude of his brethren, seeking the good of his people and speaking peace to all his countrymen." You know what the Jews say today? "We just want peace. Just agree not to kill us, and we will make peace with you." And yet, there's a devil, Satan. He's still in charge of certain people's lives in this country, and he wants nothing to do in his demented, spiritual, fallen state than to somehow think he can thwart the plans of God and make God a liar by destroying the people that God has promised to protect. Satan loses, God wins, and we get to watch the battle. It's a spiritual battle on the highest planes of spiritual warfare, and it's going to affect us all, I think, here soon. Father, we thank you for this book. We thank you that no matter what man proposes, you have the veto to dispose. And as we realize, we live in a country that is on the wrong side of this argument and has been complicit in playing both sides and not realizing the authority of you and your word and your plan for your people, that tough times are coming. And I just pray, Father, that you would help us as Christians, as even so many churches are changing sides on what they think about your people being gathered into the nation of Israel, that we would stay true to the fact it's not our land, it's your land. And you didn't give it to others, you gave it to your Jewish people as you prophesied, even in Ezekiel 36, 37, that in the last days you're going to bring them back in the land, not because they're believing in you, but because your name is at stake. And we just so rejoice, Lord, that we've watched all this happen before our eyes, and we know that you are alive and your promises are kept, and that we can therefore rest in the assurance that Jesus truly is going to usher us into heaven forever because of his shed blood for us, that he promised to do for those that come humbly to him for salvation. In Jesus' name, amen.
Let's stand.
Said to present our lives as living sacrifices before God, which is our reasonable and acceptable service. And, you know, Jesus, I love you. I lay my life before you. Use it. If we do that, like Mordecai did, okay, my life's over if he wants to kill me, but I'm giving it to God. He can do great things with a life he owns and can use.